Hello, and welcome to the Tavern Chat Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Tenkar, and this is another of our fireside chats with designers and makers of our community. I'm going to, apologize ahead of time. I used to always make fun of people who, claimed con crud after returning from a con, but I think I officially have con crud. So if I sound like I've taken up smoking two packs a day, that isn't what is happening right now. Tonight with me is Ben from Virtual Rasa. It's a VTT. Ben, welcome.
Thank you very much.
So, as I mentioned before, before we started the recording here and before we started the show, I'm going to ask you five questions to get a little insight into your background within this hobby or RPG world of ours. And if you don't mind, I'll start now.
Please.
All right. Tell us about your first RPG experience.
I was 8, I think, and a little younger, maybe 6. My brother was running first edition AD&D for all of his friends. And, I was 6. I wanted to do what my brother was doing, right?
So, of course.
Yeah, so I hang out. He builds me a cleric so that, the party has a healbot who doesn't have to, none of the other players have to suffer with that. And I have no idea how to play, so I'm like, I cast, Cure Light Wounds on, not the orc, I guess, Bob, Dark Axe, or whatever. And that lasted for a while. I wasn't great at it. I was 6, right? But
right.
When I got into junior high, I started playing with a bunch of other friends, and we played a lot of weird games, or at least weird by today's standards, Palladium.
Played in fantasy riffs.
Yeah.
Broken system, but great settings.
Yeah. I played Top Secret for a little while, though I didn't really get into it. I started running AD&D First Ed for some of my friends. I guess Second Ed was out at that point, but I didn't have any of the books. So.
Okay.
And then when I got to my first real job after college, one of my coworkers had mentioned that he wanted to start up a work gaming group again. And everybody in the department more or less started playing D&D together after we finished work Monday nights, and we've been playing for about 15 years now.
God bless. That's awesome.
I figured out a couple months ago, I'm like, geez, we've been playing forever. That's unbelievable. But 18 years now. It isn't even 15. I can't count. Wow, it's pushing 18.
Well, my high school college group stayed together for, I guess, 17 to 20, about 11 years. And we're still friends. We still email back and forth on a daily basis. But the realities of life and kids and everything else, it became EverQuest for us for a long time.
Yeah.
But, now I don't have to. It's funny. As a retired police officer, I have less free time to play MMOs, which are a hell of a time sink, than I did when I was working.
Yeah. No. You start doing something on your own, I guess the way you're running the tavern or, the sort of stuff I'm doing. Any kind of, real job that takes up your time. And it gets hard to make time for D&D.
Yeah. And in my case, I just came back from GaryCon. I ran 3 sessions of Rappanathic, Mouth of Doom, using the 3D terrain printed out by Fat Dragon Games.
Nice.
And but they had us in just like last year. I understand why they do it. They have us in a hallway by the war gamers. So I have war gamers in a room behind me, war gamers in a room across from me, and then at the end of the hallway toward my left, I have more war gamers going on. And wargaming, it seems to be a lot of fun. They really get into it, and they're loud. And I have this huge ass table that I can't even reach the middle of our 3D terrain because my arms don't quite reach even if I'm laying on the table. So I need to say I stood the whole time when I was GMing so I could walk from one side of the table to the other, keep my players engaged. But 3 days of doing that, my voice is hurting. The voice itself might be more just overuse as opposed to concrete. It'll play out. We'll find out. But all right, so your first experience was with AD&D. So now I'm going to ask you, what is your go-to RPG system?
It's a toss-up between Pathfinder. I'm running a Pathfinder game for my nephew, trying to bring him into the hobby,
Nice.
and some friends of mine took Pathfinder First Edition, which I guess Second Edition's on the edge now. But there's a lot of the math that they didn't like, and actually, we're talking about it on the last Breakfast Club that Monty Cook had put his thumb on the math and messed up parts of it intentionally as a nice surprise for players. It drove him nuts, so he started a new gaming system that's sort of an amalgam of the parts he liked from D&D 4, D&D 5, and Pathfinder. He calls it Epic Path. I'll paste a link into the chat here. It's epicpath.org for those of you listening.
Oh, I never even
But
heard of that. Interesting.
yeah, it's very Pathfinder-like. It's definitely D20. If I'm playing with someone who's never seen Epic Path, Pathfinder is definitely my go-to.
Huh. I'm gonna have to look at that. I've always found Pathfinder to have too much math for
There's a lot
my
of math,
needs.
and I won't lie. Epic Path has a ton of character creation and tinkering. If you like tweaking your character, Epic Path has got it for you in spades. But
Well, I'll have to peek at that.
it's a
Interesting.
little smoother. The real hook that Epic Path has to push my buddy's thing is all the monsters are really easy to run. So as a D&D, there's much less prep for monsters.
Well, the less prep part is awesome. I'm always for less prep because that is often the biggest time sink as a GM. That's for the balance between players' investment and GM's investment when it comes to time.
Oh yeah.
Is that a balance of less, anything that can make prep time easier for the GM is awesome in my books. I'll definitely take a peek.
So especially when you interrogate the players about where they're going to go next week, and they promise you they're going to go left, and they go right, and you don't really feel that it's appropriate to take the encounter you had on the left and put it on the right for story reasons. So now what do you do?
There you go. All right, so we'll get with the next question then. So you came in with AD&D 1A, and that's really how I came in too. So I didn't, I always saw a basic expert as, a child's game. Probably definitely wrong looking back, but one of the things that basic had was races class. How do you, yay or nay, how do you feel about races class?
I never really liked it. It seemed too constraining. If as an elf, what you're playing was an elf, and I understand in the Tolkien simulator or whatever, you're playing an elf, you're playing a dwarf. Okay, but what if I want to? It isn't that I always want to be what Drizzt, the emotional emo dark elf, but I might
Right.
want to do something other than, cast the odd spell and have really good hearing or vision, or I don't even remember what basic gave elves anymore. But it seemed really constraining that it was an obvious push towards you should be human because humans are better than everyone else, and that was what the game wanted you to do, and that was okay. But yeah, wasn't my bag.
Well, yeah, I think the push, there was the idea that the game balance came into play on some level where, well, we're giving these semi-humans all these abilities up front, therefore we're going to limit their level in
Yeah.
the end, and we're going to allow them to only play, like, if you're an elf, you're a fighter magic. If you're a dwarf, you're basically just a fighter. If you're a halfling, you're pretty much a stunted fighter that will never get good. I've always liked the idea of some options. I like playing dwarf clerics, and that was never an option until Unearthed
Yeah.
Arcana.
The other problem with that as a technique, although, certainly there's no way that they could have known that without the 30 years of gaming experience that's come by since,
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
is the games are front loaded. So if you're better starting off than everybody around you, and the game lasts for 6 months, 2 years, whatever, and everybody gets level five, you're still better than everybody else.
I guess hindsight's always 2020,
Yeah.
especially in
Well,
games.
no, and I mean his gaming group lasted for decades too, right? So it wasn't a problem he had.
Right, and then Gary never actually followed the rules that he wrote anyway,
Oh
so
yeah, not even close.
yeah, he was playing something that pretty much came out of his own head, and I'm sure house rules were somewhere written down, and some just naturally evolved at the table.
And
All
some of
right.
them he thought were in the rule
Next
book
one.
because he used them so often.
Oh, yeah. The DMG is such a hodgepodge of what really is house rules. It is when I open it up with the eyes of somebody who really like looks at the individual parts, you realize that, wow, in today's day, that book would be rewritten hugely, just not only just to make it easier to grasp and organize, but to make sure all the rules work with each other, which they don't necessarily do in a DMG.
Yeah, they were not super internally consistent.
Now, just let's not talk about unarmed combat. Oh dear.
Which has always been a hassle.
Oh my God. It's like everything else is roll you D20, but here I roll percentiles with all these adjustments. Oh my God. And then psionics, but that's another case.
Yeah, that's another one. But I mean, it was a bag on the side, right? And it didn't get as much testing, and it showed.
Right. And again, it was a whole different system.
Oh, you want to play this other game? Yeah, feel free. It's just a different game.
But we're gonna tag this different game on top of your game. Okay. Where do you stand on save or die?
I don't really like it. Save or suck is a close second, but I like the things where you can shake them off. You can get back in the game. If you're paralyzed, that combat sucks until you save. And if you don't get to save again for an hour or a day, well, you're not going to get much playing done at the table. Save or die is a bigger version of that. Oh, I rolled badly. I guess I write a new character. And especially if you're playing a game like Pathfinder, where on the one hand, you're a little more invested in your character because you've had him for a while. But on the other hand, there's so much work building him that you're invested in him almost by default, that that's kind of a big pain in the patoot. Oh, I have to go make a new one. And death isn't always permanent, right? But if you're best case, if you're killed, you're out of that combat. And that's not fun. I'm there to, throw things at other people, but also throw dice on the table and talk about what I'm doing. And as a corpse, my character is going to be lying there bleeding.
And save or die is, I always, to me, and I've said this before, I see it like spice. It has value if it's used sparingly,
Very
like.
irregularly, the game needs to have danger. If the players are never going to get killed by the enemy, then they're going to start doing stupider and stupider stuff in the sense of, I'm going to open the door and take on everybody in the room because I'm probably not going to die. Well, that kind of breaks some of the immersion. Okay, but if players might die, I'm going to play a little more cautiously. My players are going to play a little more cautiously.
Definitely. All right. Well, here we'll give you the final question before we move on to our hex crawl. What would the teenage you think if they could see what you would have accomplished in a hobby by this point in your life? Yeah,
I
I know
guess
it's
it
not an
wouldn't
easy
be.
question.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I don't think that the teenage me would be overwhelmed. Oh man, you're a monster among DMs or players or whatever, man. But at the same time, old me, you've been playing for a while. You sort of have a grip on both sides of the screen. You have a bunch of friends. You don't screw up the rules too often when you're playing. Good on you. I think he'd be positive. I don't think that he'd, be going, oh, I'm not worthy in some kind of Wayne's World kind of way. But I think he'd, be pleased.
Wayne's World. First reference of Wayne's World on this podcast, and that's awesome.
Really? All
I
right.
love it. I love the movie, man. Party on.
Already on, dude.
Game. Oh, wait. Come through. Game on. It's like, oh Jesus, this street hockey killed me. All right, well, yeah, I got derailed on that one pretty bad. Sorry. All right, so Ben, you're involved with the a virtual tabletop, and I've been following virtual tabletops pretty much since I returned to the hobby. I was around playing with Screen Monkey and Klug. Those are nightmares, and you think about where we are today. But what makes your VTT stand out from the others. You know,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I love trying to figure out the perfect VTT, and I've yet to find it.
Yeah, and it, I mean, of course, this is one of those things that can be different for different people, because,
right.
You know, mine does this thing, but not that thing, and that thing is your killer feature, or whatever. What I think makes ours different is that we made it network-centric first, so above all else, it tries to remain interactive, it tries to keep the players connected, it tries to keep the map updated. And I mean, that doesn't sound like a huge bar. I'm not trying to say that the other VTTs don't do a good job there. I'm sure that they do. I have intentionally not looked super hard at the other guys out there because I don't want to accidentally copy something they're doing.
Right.
But I sort of feel like our first focus is keep the game network running. And the second one is push artwork or push features other than straight text chat and token moving. Because if you can't see the tokens move on the map, you're going to have a real hard time playing the game. And a couple of our players moved cross-country. That was sort of what inspired building this. We'd been using Map Tool for a while, and it sort of got a little too hard to use. So I guess I've looked at that one, to be fair.
I actually donated to Map Tool early on because it's a free... Yeah, and I put money... I donated money, and Map Tool was... what's the best way to put it? The return on your investment to learn how to use it properly, I didn't have the time to invest.
Yeah. There was a high barrier to entry to using it well. Yeah. And you could fake a lot of it and it would be acceptable. But if you really wanted, you know, Fog of War to work properly or line of sight, man, that was a pain in the patoot.
Oh, you'd be there for days just plotting that. I certainly didn't have that in me.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I did it for some of my maps when I was GMing, and I clicked the wrong place. Do I erase it all and start over? Do I sort of, you know, glue another line across it? And I mean, it was awesome when it worked, but it was so rare that that part of it did exactly what I wanted it to. It was
right.
An awesome feature. It was really neat, and I think MapPool is fantastic. Great piece of software that was free, was phenomenal. The spate of updates that were incompatible with each other and the spate of updates that sort of didn't quite 100% totally work kind of turned our group off of it because we couldn't consistently use it every week. And that
Right.
sort of made us sad. We all had to sync up on version again, that kind of thing. But no, it was a great product. But as I say, we sort of stopped using that one and we needed something where, you know, my buddy Jeff, who's working on Virtuoroso with me, could play our game.
So, when it comes to user friendliness now, where would you put this at? I mean, compare. I mean, I've used Fantasy Grounds as a player, awesome. As a GM, unless you're willing to buy a pre-written plugin module, you know, putting your own into the system almost needs some computer knowledge, computer language knowledge, and Roll20, which I have used. Used fairly regularly. I became a minimalist because to use anything but the quick features, Fog of War and Pointer, became, again, the amount of time that you needed to invest in getting it where you wanted to was minimal, for minimal returns in the end. I think a lot of folks are looking for something that is, you know, easy to... relatively easy to jump into. Not think any VTT can be easy. No role-playing game is easy. It's all learning the tricks to it, but how do you see Virtuoroso on this scale?
So since I'm one of the guys making it, I, of course, you know, totally easy. It's not totally easy. There are definite barrier to entry problems. One of the things that we see are people joining our demo world, moving the token around a couple times and going away never to come back. And I mean, that's totally fair. Especially if you don't have a bunch of people you're trying to actively play with, you know, getting your feet wet in a VTT is hard if you're not actually playing. I feel like the minimalist level, tokens on a map, doodling a map or uploading a map image, the documentation on uploading map image needs to be better. I'll say that first off. But in terms of if you and I and a couple of other people on the chat right now wanted to hop on, I pulled out, you know, a module off my shelf and I needed to just sketch out the room that you guys are in. I could have tokens up and running For the players and some not very good tokens for the monsters in the sense of they'd be black. That is okay. Black text. But we could play D&D or whatever, you know, generically. We could play an RPG. Right. I think that the basic, the minimalist level is definitely low barrier to entry. I think that the really cool stuff we've got is also hidden behind a certain amount of knowledge. We have pretty good support for, in my mind, for cameras. So you can do things like, my favorite feature is Dungeon Cam. You know, you have a bunch of 3D printed terrain you've been using for Appanathic. You know, we all have minis, and there's a lot of tactile element to playing D&D. And if you're playing on a VTT, you don't get to throw your minis around. Well, so if you project it onto a table, which I've done for a while, and you put your minis on the map, and you take your little webcam, you put it at eye level of your mini, it's a different game. You know, that well-detailed sculpture that you printed or bought of, you know, a dragon or a bugbear or whatever, that's pretty scary when it's actually the whole size of your camera and you see a little guy next to it, you know, about to get eaten.
Well, and that's what Matt Finch has been doing on YouTube. The immersion factor is huge on that.
That's awesome that he's doing that. I need to check some of those out. I don't think that we're the only guys who figured out that that's a possibility. Very few new things under the sun. But no, I think there are a lot of... I wouldn't call them Easter eggs because we want people to use them. They're supposed to be out in front. They're not trivial to get to. What I think will probably happen is that they're easy to trigger by accident. Once you figure out what you did, like, oh, hey, that's really neat. We need to make them more discoverable.
Well, that certainly works. So now, I'm assuming that there's a dice roller because every VTT has to have a dice roller.
Hilariously, not yet. We haven't implemented that one yet.
Really?
It's like bug number 4 or something that we don't have a dice roller. We all like rolling dice.
We do. Honestly, yeah. I played with my Roll 20, and my groups are always like, so are we using the dice roller or can we roll our own?
Yeah. And I understand about, you know, not cheating. You know, when I'm playing with my nephew, I don't know if it's his dice or if it's him, but he rolls an awful lot of 18s, 19s, and 20s. And you know what? That's okay. I don't really care. We're there to have fun.
Right.
So, it's a little weird. And if you were using our dice roller, I'd, you know what the roll was. But it again, this is a tactile game. If you're playing with someone who is breaking the game by always rolling a 20, well, that's a different problem. That's a social problem. If you don't like playing with someone who's doing that, you need to figure out how to address it. And you either kick them out of the game, or you talk to them offline, or something. I mean, that's up to you and your gaming style. But if you're having fun, you're having fun. And I totally, you know, love the Paizo board dice roller that they have that's reliable and consistent and much harder to cheat and, you know, shows all the math. But, and I do want a dice roller in Virtuosa because a lot of people want a dice roller. But
right.
we haven't done it yet. That's a factor of everyone in our group uses dice, and so it hasn't been a pain spot for us. I do think that we need to put it in there.
Fair enough. Now, do you have Fog of War?
Not yet. I really want it. That's issue like 20. So I came from Map Tool, and Map Tool had great Fog of War. And as I say, there were problems with it. It was hard to use. It was hard to create. If a player revealed something accidentally, it was bad, so you had to only let the GM reveal Fog of War, and then the players had to move their tokens. And it is a pain. I had some thoughts on computer detection of Fog of War. There are ways of, you know, uploading a PNG, a portable network graphic image file, and if parts of it are transparent or if parts of it have a image transition from point A to point B, you know, any computer at this point is powerful enough to figure out that there's a gradient there, that there's a big change. And maybe that's a wall. And that would be really awesome to be able to teach Virtuosa to say, hey, I think these are the walls. Do you agree? And have it draw in a Fog of War for you. And that's...
Oh, that's cool.
That's what we're working towards. And that's our plan. But right now, our Fog of War is I have really big... solid colored black tokens that I drop on top of the map when I don't want the map revealed. And the other guy who's using this gem with us reveals the map. He doesn't reveal the monsters in the map. We can hide monsters. So monsters have, or any token has about 3 or 4 states, present and visible to everybody, only visible to GMs, marked with an attribute, and we want to put more attributes on. We want to put on auras and more radii. Right now we have a move radius for a token, but we don't have any of the fourth ed radii or any of the healing burst radiuses or anything marked. So we want those, but we have a state and we call it hidden, but it could be anything. It could be dying. It could be flying. The token looks different. So we've got that extra state. And so what SO, my GM, who doesn't believe in Fog of War, does is he shows us the whole map, but none of the monsters are visible. And of course, you know, the secret rooms aren't on the map that he's necessarily showing us. If we go into a room, he reveals the monsters that he's already populated when he wants to. And otherwise, we can't see them. We can't interact with them. It's fine. But real Fog of War? No, I'd really like it, because then I wouldn't have to do this hokey pokey with the tokens in the way for my game.
No, I got you. And it's similar to, in a way, to like with your other DM there, running with 3D terrain that's already out on the table, already assembled.
It's somewhere. People know there's a room that looks like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I actually, my player's like, well, I think if we metagamed, we'd know we'd want to go there. Or
the big room with the thing in it.
All right, and I would tell the groups that, you know, after the session, I was like, how'd you like the pace? Like, oh, it's pretty fast pace. I go, yeah, I keep a pretty fast pace for this because giving you time to think lets you metagame. I got to keep you moving quickly so you don't. You know, we got to keep that illusion going that, yes, you're seeing the whole dungeon, but.
In a certain sense, this is like the guy who always rolls 20s. You have to trust your players to either not metagame or not break the game by metagaming. And if they're going to keep breaking the game, that's bothering you. You have to address it. And if it's not, maybe you adapt your playstyle. I mean, one of the things VTTs do, we've seen two interesting things come out of using VTTs for our regular game. And by VTTs, I of course mean Virtuoso, but I think it applies to the other guys too. The first one is, if the whole map is visible, there's a certain amount of metagaming that can be done. And there are a couple of ways around that one. The map we're on in our Monday game is enormous and it's outdoors. So it isn't that there's a corridor leading to a dead end that's probably a secret door, because it's not there. There's a whole bunch of buildings, and some of them are bigger than others, and they're all basically rectangles. So I don't know which one's the one I really want to go in. How could I? But that also brings me to the other thing. VTTs make it easy to have enormous maps. The D20 games especially are mostly a melee combat simulator, because it's not fun to be 400 yards apart and shooting bows at each other while people close at 30 feet or 60 feet per round. It's slow and a slog. With a VTT, though, the GM really easily can drop a big map on you guys and have combat start a lot further out than you might expect. And sometimes that's good for the players. If you're in a game where you get power-ups or action points per round, there are games with a dynamic where everybody gets a +1 after the 10th round, and it goes up by 1 every round after that. Long battles are good for you then, right? But otherwise, there's a lot of moving around tactics that don't happen in D&D. That they don't break the game, but they don't necessarily add to it. Oh, I'm going to move forward 30 feet and 5 feet to the right. Okay, the nearest guy is 200 feet away. If you're 205 feet from him, it's not going to make a huge difference unless I'm really trying to get out of that range increment. And that's metagaming, right? So I don't do that kind of thing. I'm like, no, I'm going to move straight ahead or I'm going to try to hide behind this tree. And if that gets me out of the range increment, all the better. But I'm trying to hide by the tree, man. Or whatever. So big maps become a thing. And I actually think that that's sort of a danger sign. I think that most of the games aren't designed for big maps. And that's something that the GM has to be careful about. Unless the big map is really full of everything. If you're playing the world's biggest dungeon, where it's just all one big map, or something like that, and it doesn't matter how dense it is. If you're playing, I just forgot the name of it. Frog God just re-released it. The House.
Rapanathic? No.
The Rumps. Judge's Guild.
Now why? And I backed it too, and I always have a
blank
for it.
Tegel Manor. It's basically one, or I actually don't remember if it's multi-level. I don't think it is, but let's say it is. You know, it's 1 to 5 big maps, but there's something happening everywhere, and there are walls in the way, and you're not shooting arrows all the time. And if someone's sneaking up on you, you don't know it because they're around five corners, and that's cool.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you know, outdoor big maps are bad. Indoor huge rooms that are 200 or 300 feet across, they shouldn't be the norm because it's going to break your game. You can do it once in a while, like everything else, but it's going to break your game if you've always got big combats.
No, you're certainly right. And it breaks the game because it's down the game. Pacing is different whether you're running a convention game or whether you're running a game at your home table or your VTT.
I have all the time in the world at home, but at a con, I've got, what, 4, 2, 3 hours? Depends.
Right. You need to make sure that there's at least a chance for them to finish where they need to get to and accomplish something. But even with home games, if combat drags out too long,
you start playing another game while they're playing D&D. It's not fun.
No, that's when the cell phones come out. Huh. Or if you're playing on a VTT, that's when your artist friend starts sketching his latest piece of artwork. Because they're only going to be half into it because you got such a delay in between when you get to your next player.
And even if the round looks so even if you're trying to keep on top of that and the rounds are going, okay, you, I move, I don't know, great, you're holding action, you, I move, and you're really pressing them so that they're ready when they go, and all you're doing is moving and maybe taking a pot shot with an arrow, that's still too boring. Okay, I move forward 30 feet, can I shoot him yet? No, you're still outside 500 increments. Great, I move forward another 30 feet. I'm still, you know, doodling or, you know, looking for food.
Right.
Oh, is it my turn again? No? Oh, sorry, guys.
So, yeah, that's one of those things I think as a GM, you learn from, hopefully you learn it from your time as a player.
Yeah.
But I played in a con game a couple of years ago, which just did not.
Just dragged. Yeah. And that does happen, and especially with new GMs. Yep. And I mean, I've been new GM. We all have at some point, right? Unless you haven't been GM yet, in which case you're definitely a new GM. But I think that it's also important to know where the traps in your game system are. And it's going to vary. You know, the one of the traps in Pathfinder is ranged combat because it's not fun. One of the traps is killing your players all the time because making a player is an investment in time. And if you have a whole bunch of pregens, that's less of a big deal. But if you've got, you know, a whole bunch of characters that need any real work and they keep dying off, you're going to start getting Bob 2 or, you know, whatever. Because, oh, no, I know how to build this guy. I built a fighter. I built him like this. Okay, so what's the difference? He's got blonde hair. Okay, great. And one of the traps in VTTs are maps that look really great but don't work. And that can be multiple things. That can be too big. That can be too busy. That can be, I spent 12 hours on Fog of War. The players marched in the front door, went straight up the middle, killed everything, and walked away. Well, okay. I mean, it worked. They had fun. I didn't.
Right. But
that's on me, right? I spent too much time prepping it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm one of those DMs that when that starts to happen, I already start to improvise. How am I going to make this last long? Especially you get a convention. You know, sometimes you see things are going to take too long, and you got to change things around in the background.
Get rid of an encounter. Have the big bad show up early, whatever.
Right, or if it's going too slow, you know, go too fast. Like, how am I going to slow this down? But I've done that in my home groups. But generally speaking, your home groups has more of a campaign. And your players get more upset if they find out that you've been dicking around with stuff behind the scenes in regards to their actions.
It is, too. If I'm playing an adventure path and I'm really altering the path, there's this sense that the story is supposed to be a certain story and it's not as much my story as the people who wrote it. And that's not totally true. I mean, it's our game. It's our story, as opposed to the fine folks at Paizo or whatever. But at the same time, I'm going to play Rise of the Rune Lords, but it turns out there are no Rune Lords in it. It's all this guy who's the Wizard of Oz and has this big projection image or whatever. That's a different game. That might not be the one they signed up for, kind of thing. And there are shades of that, so you can get mad if you do, you know, throw away as part of the campaign, even though basically they'll almost never know until they're reading about it later or talking with other people. unless they're cheating, which, you know, you assume they're not. But there's a focus on not doing that. If you're playing a sandbox, the only rewarding there is, oh, I made this encounter, and as I said earlier, I wanted it to be the one on the left. Can I move it to the one on the right and use some of my prep time? Or is that going to screw me up too badly? Because story-wise. And that brings me to another place where VTTs, if you prep in a VTT and you put out all your tokens, a huge lag is, guys, hang on, I have to put in some more tokens real quick because you did something I didn't expect. Boom! Everyone goes and gets pizza. It is a problem at home. I think it's less a problem in a sandbox game, but when you're running a printed game, players definitely get mad if they find out that you're, you know, fudging it somehow. I don't mean fudging rules. I mean, you know, changing the storyline. Unless you said, essentially, unless our expectations are set. If you say, yeah, okay, I'm using the setting for Rise of the Rune Lords, but actually, so this is a thing with their Cthulhu-esque madness adventure path that I bought. And I read it, but wasn't overwhelmed by it. If I wanted to play it, I'd basically say, I'm using this setting, but I don't like their story. So I'm replacing the story. And the setting is here, and it's still going to be totally eldritch horror and tentacle monsters and, you know, things that make you mad. But it's not going to be their story. So if you want to play that story, you have to find a different game.
Which is totally fair. That's, yeah, you're keeping the very basic framework, but you're changing the rooms around inside, basically.
Yeah, and I might even keep some of the maps, but the idea behind, you know, you're being funneled towards the end monster in the first module isn't one I was happy with. And the start of the module, they warn you, you know, your players have to really trust a GM because there's some stuff going on with their backstory that they're not allowed to know. And that's a big reach for players. It's a big reach if also it turns out that you don't like what that backstory happens to be. And I don't want to say any more about that one because I'm sure other people haven't played it. But I didn't like the story overall that they were telling across the six volumes. So I wanted a different story.
Okay. If you're not enjoying what you're running, your players in the end aren't going to enjoy what they're
playing. Not going to either. They're going to know that you're, and then some orcs show up. Seriously, dude? Put some heart into it. If you don't like orcs, make it a different monster.
Please. Well, I got a question for you. Virtua Rasa is free. It's basically crowdfunding or Patreon, I guess, right?
So the theory is that we want to be crowd-supported. Right now we're self-funded, by which I mean that we don't get paid, and we're paying for the very minimal server space that we have ourselves.
Okay.
Right now we have almost nothing coming in from Patreon, which is fine. But we don't want to put ads on there. We have a lot of problems with ads. They ruin how your website looks. They get more and more intrusive. In this new age of, you know, corporate overlords spying on you, they open up that opportunity. And they take away a lot of the design options that we would want for the page. If you've gotten to look, you don't have to, but if you've gotten to look at the map page, it's about 70% map, about 5%, you know, title bars and stuff. And depending on whether or not you have chat or the unit list open, it's got those or it doesn't. And if we had to shoehorn ads in there somewhere, something's got to give. And I didn't want to do that. I didn't like the way ads look. I don't like relying on them for income because I think it's an irregular income source. I mean, so is asking people for money. But, you know, at least there, either they're giving to or they're not.
Right.
Yeah.
And when it comes to Patreon, you know who you're beholden to.
Exactly.
You're beholden to your community, the people that are supporting it, as opposed to
random ads company who may or may not have contracted with this other company that you may or may not like, who may or may not buy an ad this week, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, exactly. We want it to be free. We want it to be free forever. Now, I mean, it's freemium. If you do give us money, you get a little bit more out of it. We're not trying to hobble the base game. The base game is playable. I played the base game with my nephew until I hit the barrier, which I think I hit a maps barrier. I couldn't make another map. And that's okay, because if you're testing it out, you're testing it out, and it should be free, and you should get to play that as long as it's working for you. But if you're going to play through an adventure path and you're going to commit on your side to building out 15 or 20 different maps for your players to play with, and you don't want to keep deleting old maps, which is, I think, a fine thing not to want to do, you know, in exchange for us providing you the space to do that, we'd like a little bit of money per month. And if you don't want to do that, you know, you don't have to. As I say, I think the base game, the base Virtual Raza, without giving us any money, is entirely playable. We're really trying to make that work. We don't want it to be, oh, here's a taste for 30 seconds, and you get one token and 5 minutes of game access, and then we kick you out. That sucks. Nobody.
Oh, I'm not going to say anything. I know what you're talking about. Okay.
And I'm not trying to pick on anybody else there. As I say, I haven't used what I think are the other big players in the market right now. The last VTT I used was MapTool. I want the base game to be playable enough that people get a good look at it and decide whether or not they think this is something worth supporting. And if we can get enough people to feel like this is something they want to contribute towards, we can keep it going. And, you know, we've been putting off the date because we had a really soft launch. But, you know, if after some number of months or whatever, we've still only got, you know, the $14 coming in that are from people we know who wanted us to have any money whatsoever.
Right.
And that's it. You know, nobody else says, this is something I really want. They're saying they like the other guys more. And that's okay. And they can. And we'll keep using it for our games because it works for us. But, you know, we're not going to keep investing in making it better and adding features unless we need them. And that's something,
makes sense.
Yeah, willing to let people decide. At the same time, if people do start giving us money and they're like, dude, you don't have a dice roller. I'm giving you, you know, like $10 a month and there's no dice roller, seriously? Okay, that becomes a priority. That's cool. But
let the community help you decide, man. That's really
totally
a good way to do it.
It helps. You know, it's a different kind of freemium reward. It isn't, oh, look, you get more maps. It's, you get more maps, but also, you know, this thing you really wanted, I might be able to do it quickly. It might take me, you know, 4 months, and I'll be up front and say, I totally get that. That's our new priority. I really want it to have the awesome fog of war described on Tenkar's Tavern's Fireside Chat, right? Where it auto-detects it. But that's not quick. So be assured I'm working on it. But, you know, I'll work on it a little more if someone who's giving me money wants me to do it. But it still won't be quick. I'm not going to promise it tomorrow. Because, you know, the programming rule, figure out how long you think it's going to take, double it, and go to the next order of magnitude. 2 days? Yeah, try 4 weeks.
Yeah. Well, as I mentioned earlier, I'm finding concrete. So I think we're going to have to wrap this up. But what is the easiest way for folks to find you?
Okay. So we're at virtualraza.com. That's spelled the way it is here, but it's VIRTUA. RASA.com, no hyphens, no spaces, no L in virtual.
Thank you. That was my Google foo failure earlier today.
I can see that. And a lot of people, I mean, I grant it's a simple thing to do because it is meant to imply virtual. So people want to put the L in. And I think that's fair. And probably at some point we're going to have to buy that domain name. But
when I did a Google search, my first for Virtual Rasa, I got like a yoga site.
Ouch. Oh, that's really too bad for us. We need to do something about that.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if it actually was Virtual Rasa, but Virtual Rasa for the Google site brought up a hit for a yoga place, which my wife would have been happy about, but didn't do anything for me.
D&D. So anyway, check us out at virtualrasa.com. We've got an open game, an open world that anybody can join in. It's got chat. It's got tokens. We try to be in it. We're not in it all the time. Very occasionally we sleep. There isn't a real game going on in there, so we can't really demo people playing a game in there because it's a demo world. But it'll show you what you can do as a player. To find out what you can do as a GM, you have to make an account. You have to give us your email address. That's it. We won't spam you. We use the email address for sending you password resets. If you want to give us a fake email address, you can, but you won't get your password resets if you do that.
That would suck.
Yeah. You can also log in now with Discord or a couple of other providers, Google and that kind of thing, and get an account. And that'll let you have a free basic world where you can be a player or a GM, but you can tinker a little bit more with it. You have a little bit more rights to doing things that we didn't want to grant, you know, just J random anonymous person on the internet. And but I mean, you're still essentially a random person on the internet. You're just not in our demo world that we're pointing people at. And if you really love it, you can buy a premium world that lets you have, as I say, more maps, more tokens, more players, more GMs. But as I say, your basic world, that should let you get started in playing a game for several months. I mean, easily.
Nice.
Oh, hey, Jeff. Yeah, JLHF2 just commented here, is the guy I'm working with across the country on this thing. And he pointed out in chat here that we've got, looks like, four social providers plus our own login system.
Nice. Oh, yeah, I see it. Discord, Google, Facebook, and Amazon. That works.
Thank you very much for time, Tenkar. I'm sorry the crud is keeping you down.
You know, it is slightly funny because I used to joke with my wife when I retired. It's like, hey, now that I'm retired, I can afford to get sick. And I didn't get sick. And then I was pretty good for like the first 2.5 years of retirement. In the last couple of months, I've been getting on and off with just like, you know, flu, that like, you know, never ending 3-week flu. So hopefully this doesn't last. But Ben, thank you so much for joining. I am a VTT junkie, so I'm going to start delving into this.
Please. And if you find something that you think is clunky or hard to understand or even just missing, we really want feedback. More important than people giving us money right now is people saying this thing is good or this thing is bad. And either way, because that'll help us understand what we're doing. I know how it works, but you probably don't because you didn't write it. And if you can say that this part's great, that'll make me feel good. If you can say this part's bad, I'll know to fix it. So that's good too.
Good enough.
There's also a contact us button on every page of the website that sends us an email. We already know, theoretically, your email address, because theoretically you gave us one. As I say, if it's a fake one, whatever. We won't be able to reply if you give us a fake email address. But, that's one way to get in touch with us. We try to be on Discord. We try to be in the demo world.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you have a channel on our Discord, too. So I know you participate. You guys were on the Breakfast Club Sunday, right?
Yeah. I had a great time talking with Puddles and Pex and a bunch of other people on the Breakfast Club.
And after that podcast will probably be up later this week. I'll make sure I turn to it because I could share now the Breakfast Club. Well, again, thank you so much for joining, folks. Thank you for the live listeners that we had. Thank you. And for those listening, when this gets shared out, awesome. As always, folks, stay safe, be well, God bless, roll those dice, and I will talk with you all tomorrow.